If you're not listening to the Smoke World Podcast, you're wasting your time, you mortal.
What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of Smoke World. I'm your host, Stone. So go grab that stick. Go grab a glass of whatever you're drinking. Let's sit back and have that conversation. You can follow me on Instagram at Smoke World Podcast. Email stone@smokeworldpodcast.com. And the website, folks, is smokeworldpodcast.com. What's up, people? How you feeling? What's going on? I'm excited to bring this episode to you. It's a little lengthy, but it's informative on what's going on out here with the PCA, the Premium Cigar Association, the fight they're out here fighting for us. They're doing a thing. This was recorded at the PCA event back in July. I know it's October. Mind your business. Doesn't matter. Good information, though. It's great information. You need to know. Sit back, grab a stick, grab a glass, whatever you're drinking. Because I want you to absorb this information on exactly what they go through to keep us doing what we do. Okay? So I just want to let you know this episode is sponsored by West Tampa Tobacco Company, folks. If you're not familiar, go to westtampatobaccocompany.com. They have some awesome cigars. It's the black and the white. If you're not familiar, I want to whet your appetite. So go check them out, West Tampa Tobacco Company Cigar. Thanks for sponsoring the episode. Now sit back, relax, get into this thing, because I don't want to do too much talking because it's a little lengthy, like I said. But you learned something, okay?
My name is Oliver Naveau with United Cigars, and we are very pleased to support and sponsor the Government Affairs seminar, which is very important. United Cigars is all about standing united, living united, and that's kind of our go-to. The cigar that you're smoking tonight is the United Robusto with an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. It's a very light, medium-bodied, box-pressed cigar. But inside every box, which we're very proud of, inside every box of United Cigars, there is a star from a U.S. flag. And that is cut out by veterans as a way to just bring support and more information to people out there for first responders and our veterans. So what we do is we give back to the foundation, and in every box of United that you purchase, part of that, you'll see a star in there, and the proceeds go back to the stars for our troops. So we're very proud to be a part of that. So once again, very, very pleased to be, thank you. But yeah, very pleased to be sponsoring this event. Very important. If you have a chance, please stop by booth 361 for United Cigars, because this is a very important time for us all to start smoking United. So thank you.
David Garofalo.
There we go. That's Oliver Naveau. Thanks, everybody, for coming to this particular seminar. I wish the audience was bigger, because this is the most important one of all. So those that ended up showing up, thank you, because we're doing it for the ones that don't show up. And these guys, the whole PCA is about fighting for our industry. It's not a trade show. We are at a trade show, and the trade show is a free part of this industry. But this, you're joining the PCA for what happened, and what a week it was. This should be the biggest celebration of all of what happened with the FDA. This is huge. The biggest thing to ever happen in my 37 years in the cigar industry has happened, and everybody said it couldn't, and that's because of these folks that are relentless. They fight, they fight, they fight. When they tell you, okay, just forget about it, we can't win this one, we got to let it go, and they don't do it. They continue to fight for us, for every one of us, including the ones that don't show up here. So I couldn't be more honored to be a sponsor of this particular one. When I was asked, I jumped at the opportunity to it. Why wasn't this the first one everybody should jump at? This is the most important, because they figured a lot of people wouldn't show up for it. But the important ones did. Thank you all for showing up and being part of this organization. Thank you so much. Now let's back and hear what's going on in our future, because the fight continues. It's not over. It continues. Thank you.
All right, thank you, United Cigars. You know, just as we talked about earlier in that previous session, right, I'm talking about those people here believe in us, United Cigars, Dave Garofalo, obviously, believe in us. So please go by that booth, show them some love and some support, because United is a big supporter of ours, and they have been for quite some time. So I promise I'm going to do as little talking as possible, because I guarantee you're all sick of hearing my voice. So I just want to introduce the panel here, and we're going to get right into asking them the questions so we can hear from them. Far right is Patrick Anderson. Patrick is somebody who's been working with us now for several years, has been really in the trenches with us, consultant, but Patrick is a phenomenal ally and asset for us. Because of Patrick's work, we've been able to get things like working groups in the White House and chief counsel of the White House working on our issue back when the FDA was still considering our substantial equivalence lawsuit, the first lawsuit. Actually, it's the second one that we won after the warning labels. So Patrick is a great friend, great ally, and somebody who's got a lot of great deep insights on a multitude of topics and subjects as it relates to not just FDA regulations, but a whole host of other things of tax and other regulatory issues for us. Next to him, I don't know if anybody knows this guy here. This is Glenn Loop. It's G-L-Y-N-N. He's fairly new to the industry. Hasn't been around that long. Smoked his first cigar, I think, just a couple of days ago, right? So, no, Glenn Loop. Glenn Loop heads all of our state activities. Glenn is a man on fire, no pun intended there. Glenn has been mowing down everything in the states, helping us get state association coordination established. Our goal, as we'll hear as we talk about, we want to be local everywhere. We want a 50-state machine that is mowing down stupid regulations and propping up good regulations across the country, and that is Glenn's purview and what he's running with and doing a fantastic job. And then Joshua Hiberski, the wolf of K Street himself, who heads all of our government affairs and kind of keeping everything going forward. Josh loves premium cigars every bit as much as everybody in this room, maybe a little bit more. I think he chews on the leaves as he goes to sleep at night. So on that note, we're going to dive right into some questions here. And again, please feel free to ask any questions as we go along. So we'll start on the topic of the FDA. So what has changed just in the past few years with the FDA's posture towards premium cigars? That could also relate to a change in administration, if that changes, or obviously in light of different lawsuits or other regulatory aspects. So the FDA's attitudes towards premium cigars, what's different now versus pre-pandemic?
I think it's, you know, you look at the issues, and they have changed a lot over the past few years. Obviously, you have personnel changes. You had, the administration changes. But the distinctness of premium cigars, through brute force, the FDA and elected officials have had to understand the distinction of premium cigars. Now, the lawsuit this week, which was the third victory, 3-0, against the FDA, thanks to CRA, PCA, and CAA for being involved in those three. And, I think that it affirms it, that the opinion of Judge Maeda affirms the distinctiveness of premium cigars. And the FDA, they were positing that there was no distinction, that there were no distinct usage patterns or health effects. And that was simply not true. That's why it was determined that it violated the APA and was arbitrary and capricious. You look at the NASEM study, and I know we have a couple questions to dive deeper on that, but referencing the NASEM study, we had 15 medical professionals and researchers that we had to present to talk about premium cigars, the usage patterns and health effects. And it was a scary feeling providing the information, thinking that they might take the anti route. And if you read that report, there are a lot of positive things that we can utilize moving forward, so that understanding, whether it's in Washington, D.C., or Wichita, Kansas, local, state, and federal officials are having to understand that premium cigars are different than other tobacco products.
So we, our good friend and comrade, Mitch Zeller, is no longer there. We can have a moment of jubilation for that. Thank you. So there's a new Center for Tobacco Products Director, Mitch Zeller being the old one. What can we expect from the new guy?
I'll take this one real quick and pass it over to Patrick. I think with Dr. King, it is a fresh start. He's a week on the job. He's more of a researcher. You know, there's some scary things with nicotine maximums and, you know, a lot of stuff in the other tobacco products categories, not necessarily premium cigars. You know, we have a pending flavor issue that we'll talk about, but it's a bit of a reset that we get to develop a relationship. We get to present our case. Mitch Zeller, and working with him, it was a big challenge. He came from the advocacy space that was opposed to what we assert. So there is definitely room for learning and developing a relationship with this new FDA. And, you know, we get dealt a deck, you know, in intervals, whether it's on the legislative side or on the regulatory side with new staff, and we have to adapt and push forward.
Can I ask a quick question? This is a little tongue-in-cheek, but I think it's appropriate. Is there any way we can change the name for Center for Tobacco Products to Center for Synthetic Nicotine Products? That might make it better for us. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's one of the things that the new director is, you know, does have feelings about, based on his prior research, is vaping. And so we know that that's something that he's coming in, and he has his opinions about it already. And very close to that comes combustible tobacco. And with that, we find ourselves back in that hot seat where they want to lump all combustible tobacco into one category, regulated as one product. It makes it easier for them, right?
Yeah.
And so there is a reset, as Josh mentioned, and there is an opportunity to get in and have dialogue. And in fact, they've even invited us to come and do that, to have some high-level dialogue with them so they can understand the issues that are important to PCA as an association and how we're viewing premium cigars as a product and how that regulatory relationship might look like going forward. So I think that's one very positive development that we did not have under the previous director. But at the same time, we do have to remember that the Center for Tobacco Products has a mission, and that mission hasn't changed. So while it's a more open relationship at this time, and we're still feeling each other out, we are also, you know, we do have our guard up, and we're making sure that we're putting premium first and protecting this industry. And with the recent decision from Judge Maeda, I think that'll be a much easier task going forward.
And on that note, I mean, we in 2020. It was determined that premium cigars were the lowest enforcement priority of the Food and Drug Administration because of the uniqueness of the lack of youth access, because of the infrequent use arguments that we posit on Capitol Hill. And, yeah. You know, I think that the track record in the legal sphere and the great work that Michael Edney's done and the CRA and PCA teams in providing that check, I mean, winning three lawsuits and being the lowest enforcement priority, it has to cause the FDA to think twice about going after premium cigars again. You know, the Justice Department has unlimited resources to, you know, fight it in the courts, and it's a lot more challenging for a small mom-and-pop industry of brick-and-mortar retailers and small family-owned manufacturers to fight the leviathan of the government coffers. But, you know, our track record has to send a message to the new CTP director that we are small but mighty.
So you've mentioned Nasum a few times, and so I think everybody recalls Josh mentioned the first case in 2020 that we won about substantial equivalence. Kicked this back over to the FDA, who then handed off their responsibility effectively to Nasum. So talk a little bit about Nasum. Why are they involved? What does that involvement mean? And for the Premium Cigar Association and our approach, what we're doing, what we want that relationship to accomplish?
So basically, the Food and Drug Administration withdrew the rule on premium cigars. And by doing that, they kind of pivoted and contracted out the National Academies of Science to conduct a literature review on the health effects and usage of premium cigars, which they did. I know Scott, myself, Mike Copperman from CRA, Drew Newman, we all presented to Nasum sent over supporting evidence about the distinctiveness. They recently released their report a couple months ago, 600 pages, real page turner. And in that, there were some conclusions that were positive for the industry, that there are distinctiveness, but also that things like price point, we see it at the state level. They affirmatively said it makes no sense to have a price point in defining a premium cigar. You have $6-7 premium cigars, and in line with the MATA definition, that's what this association is asserting. There are some causes for caution or concern with the National Academies of Science report. Basically, they said that this industry has no self-regulation mechanisms, that there are concerns with marketing, that there are things out there that might not be sold to youth, but have the appearance of being sold to youth or marketed to youth. So, as an industry, as the PCA, as an industry leader, we're working to put some guardrails together, some recommendations, and that's why you saw things, the letter from Greg Zimmerman, our president, and Scott, putting people on notice, saying, you know what, you might want to think twice and have some self-restraint, because your decisions, whether you're a manufacturer or retailer, affect your brothers and sisters that are selling this, that have been doing it, the family tradition. Let's focus on that. When we go in there and we talk about the Fuentes, the Padrones, and the other companies with ornate boxes that we had to fight to, prevent from having these cumbersome warning labels, that's something that we have to take pride in. And when, Barney and cartoon characters on cigars or cigar boxes that are out there, that's a problem for everyone. And, that's why we're taking those steps to address that internally, so that the FDA doesn't have to and come down on us and hurt those companies that have been around for years, and the newer companies that are trying to just get their foothold.
And so one of the interesting things, you kind of jumped the gun a little bit and going ahead to the self-regulation that we want to get into a little bit more. But before we get there, I think it behooves us to take a step back here real quick. And I think take a look at the landscape of why brick and mortar stores are kind of involved in this really interesting, weird world between the manufacturer and the consumer, because that's the space that you are in, right? So we're looking at stores. We cater to mature adults. We ID. So the question, I think, really becomes down here, and we're going to talk about the self-regulation component to it, but your brick and mortars are on the front line. So what can brick and mortar stores do, or what can we, what advice can we give them, or what is going to be coming and presenting itself to our brick and mortars when it comes to the FDA enforcement, and how do we change or shift that focus to actually working with the brick and mortar stores as opposed to trying to shut them down?
Well, the industry is going to have to be very, very diligent now, because we're under the microscope. I would argue that the judge made a decision, and the issuance of the NASM report, they become fodder for our opposition. They become food for our opposition. And I think, and I'm convinced of this, and I shared this with the PCA board yesterday, is I think it will actually embolden a lot of our opposition to double down on us. And that's where we're going to have to be very, very diligent. And with that, we're going to have to be diligent about ID check, card check. We're going to have to be diligent about not letting underage folks come into the stores in the first place. We're going to have to be diligent on engaging the consumer in the dialogue about protecting this industry. We're going to have to be diligent about engaging the consumer with things like cigaraction.org on staying abreast of the political issues confronting this industry. We're going to have to make sure that we're enforcing state and federal laws, because they're going to be watching us. And the FDA has done over 1 million, and I'm not making that number up, they've done over 1 million compliance checks and making sure that you don't have display violations. And I'll give you a quick example of where this can come back and bite us, and there's these constant gotcha moments. Terry Gallagher told me this story, and he presented it at a conference with Smoker Friendly in Colorado. An individual came into the store and they checked his ID, checked out. the individual went into the humidor and picked out a cigar and took it to the register. And then all of a sudden they got cited for not checking his ID at the register. And they said, well, we checked you when you came into the store. And he said, no. You just allowed me to have self-serve tobacco. Self-serve tobacco. Because he went into the humidor and wasn't checked again. Well, Terry fought it and won, and they reversed the fine that they tried to subject them to. We've got to watch the gotcha moments. And like Nick Goble, I think he might be around with Nick Cigar World in Myrtle Beach, told me about the constant inflow of individuals being set up by the state health department under contract with the FDA to do cart check. And if you look at the, and we scanned them, if you look at the over 1 million compliance checks, it proves that the premium cigar sector is not a part of the problem. But we're going to be under a microscope, and we're going to have to be diligent about it.
And to that point, you know, for resources, that's another thing that we've been focused on in our government affairs team, is providing all of you that are retailers with information. At the PAC booth out front at the trade show, we will send you as many as you need, the We ID stickers for the register, for your storefronts, glass ones. We have both available for our members. This is something that we take pride in, and we go to elected officials and regulators and cite the fact that the violation rate for premium cigar stores is so low. And, you know, it's important. We'll create additional resources for retailers to have conversations with their employees for training purposes. But that's something where I think the North Star of the FDA and a lot of the anti-tobacco, you know, folks is youth access. That is something that they're dead set on curtailing. And I think it's one where us in the industry can agree with, that we can take some acceptable steps to ensure that, you know, youth are not accustomed to this product or have it readily available.
And I think in addition to preventing those gotcha moments and being vigilant about how you manage and run your stores, there's a side of this that happens only in Washington, and that's, you know, recognizing that the Center for Tobacco Products is somewhat unique as an agency within the FDA, in that they really have no checks. Every other agency out there has a presidentially appointed leader as its director. Center for Tobacco Products director is a civil servant, can't be fired by the president or the incoming administration. In addition to that, they have a budget which is also unchecked. It's financed entirely by the user fees paid by the tobacco industry. And that means that Congress has no way of checking the actions that the Center for Tobacco Products chooses to undertake, how they choose to expend those funds, what issues they choose to prioritize. So I think as another issue that we look at when we're trying to figure out how do we change the direction that CTP takes, both with how they view premium cigars, but then also how do we get them to focus on enforcing the current regulations. If they really care about youth access, T21 is the current law. That's 21 years old. Enforce it. If you care about youth access, enforce it. We do it in our stores. They can do it as well with compliance checks. But there's really no need to layer on additional regulation in order to try to reduce that. But until we can get some accountability, which requires federal changes to federal law, to get some accountability within CTP to either Congress or to the presidential administration, we're going to continue to have this fight.
All right. So I know time's going by here pretty quick. So you can tell that we talk for a living. So I told Josh, let's condense these answers a little bit more so we can kind of get through the rest of this and finish this out in style. Let's go ahead and go right to Vision 50 now. So Vision 50 is something we're calling a decade of action. And this is, how do we get activation in all 50 states and promote positive legislation? So we're not going to just fight things anymore. We're going to continue to fight, but we're not going to just stay on defense the whole time. It's about damn time we go on offense, start going after some of these states, getting tax caps, getting cigar bar legislation, going after positive legislation to stabilize the economy so that you all can operate your businesses in an environment that allows you to grow, it allows you to innovate, allows you to connect with customers and grow your businesses, which ultimately they want because it makes, you know, more money in taxes. So why Vision 50? Why now? And how is this different than what we've done in the past?
I think, you know, we said it before, it's we're at a reset point. We have to look at the future. We can't be worried solely about the next 10 months. We're not in survival mode. We're not in the, you know, the bunker at the end of the battle. I think we need to move on the offensive. This is an honorable profession. As tobacconists, as manufacturers that you are all a part of, it's something that we take pride, we have to take pride in. The charitable work that you do, the community, the social aspects of it, and we need to advance that further. So for the next 5 to 10 years, we need a strategic plan how there can be legal adults that are the next generations of tobacconists so that it is a continued staple of Main Street America. And so that's gonna be our blueprint. We're going through it and it's connected to self-regulation and addressing issues, cigar bar legislation, working with coalition partners like the restaurants and the bar industry, creating other line items where you can sell additional products or sell additional services. So, you know, that it's really a forward thinking. It's something that's not reactionary. That's the departure. We have operated in my tenure for the past 3 years doing 1 year strategic plans. We wanted to make sure that PCA was transparent, that you knew what we were advocating for and that you would have no questions. What is our stance? And, you know, we'll get into the questions and answers. Ask away, like what's going on behind closed doors, what's public. You've seen a proliferation of communication by our government affairs team for a reason. But taking that model of the 1 year plan and having it forward for the next 5 to 10 years and anticipating challenges moving forward.
So as part of that, then I want to lead right into some state conversations here. Again, this is something that's a little bit more bold and ambitious, but it's necessary for us. So on that sense, talk about, Glenn, state associations. How are the state association, that relationship with PCA, and what can retailers do to be more active in the state associations?
We're embarking upon an exciting time in the organization of our states to be effective advocates for this entire industry. Obviously, right now, the PCA doesn't have the resources to put a lobbyist in every state capital or even in every region. But what's been remarkable is a transformation, really a testament to the political sophistication of this industry, is that the retail community is picking up that slack. The retailers in the states are becoming the advocates in their state capitals, and it's always better anyway if the message comes from a local, if it comes from a small business, if it comes from a constituent. And as a result, PCA has reformed and expanded upon the new state handbook, which we're going to talk about in a seminar on Monday. And it's really a how-to manual on how to bring your state association to life, how to improve its overall organizational effectiveness, and as a result, how to improve our overall political effectiveness. And right now we've got active associations in 25 states. We're about to have another 10. And what's left are parts of the country that really don't have any burning political issues anyway. So we're going to the heart of those states that do consistently have legislative issues that have to be confronted. So we're going to be constantly and consistently doing training sessions for the retail community on how to effectively organize your retail community and subsequently organizing your consumers to be proper advocates in your state capitals and city halls on behalf of this industry.
And I think that, where did my microphone guy go with Paul? There he is. Thank God that you wore a great shirt that's easy to spot, Paul. There's no Finding Waldo here. On that note, it's really, really, really interesting and important for us to remember that we are not an industry that has, we're not the pharmaceutical industry that just has trillions of dollars at our disposal here, right? So we need to understand, and this is what we constantly look at here, we need to understand when we need to be surgical and when we need to deploy the cannons. Because there are situations that require one or the other, or sometimes both.
Yes, sir. My name is Angela Jackson. I'm from Didi & Company in Hiram, Georgia. We do not currently have a tobacco association in Georgia or a premium tobacco association in Georgia. There are those of us retailers that would absolutely love that we've tried. Tim Clifford has owned his cigar shop for probably, I don't know, 30 years. He was very active in his community. He tried to start one before, couldn't get, you know, other retails motivated to do that. So with the educational aspect that you're talking about educating retailers, how do us, as retailers, instill on our other retailers in our area how important this is? Our biggest problem is, I don't get along with you, but I like him, so I'll work with him, but I don't want to work with them, which is all really petty to us. Because 3 years ago in Savannah, Georgia, they imposed a tax or imposed a law there that you can't smoke in any of their cigar shops and you can't smoke in public.
That's right.
We can't have that bleed to Atlanta. Like, I'm really passionate about it. We have a small mom and pop shop. We don't sell alcohol. We're a traditional cigar shop with a lounge. We can't have that bleed to Atlanta that now puts us out of business. So how do we motivate? And here, I probably have, I don't know how many, I'm surprised Tim isn't in the room today, but there's very few of us that ended up at this cigar show that are from Georgia or the Atlanta area, which is really disheartening to me and a little depressing going forward, because those of us that want to grow our businesses and do things and really believe in what you're trying to do, how do we get them to support and to do what's right?
I couldn't agree with you more. Empathize with every statement you made. We can speak all night about what happened in Savannah. What happened in Savannah was one of the earliest smoking ban issues I confronted when I was with CRA. I'll say it publicly, the pathetic commentary there is that we couldn't get the cigar shops to show up at the public hearing to speak against it because they really didn't want smoking in their shops. But what you said that is absolutely correct is it set a horrible precedent. And I've heard many stories, and we don't have to get into this now, we can when we meet privately, about the infighting and I don't want to work with this. We got to get beyond that, folks. We got to get beyond that. And for example, right now Arizona is getting ready to totally overhaul its state association. Texas is getting ready to overhaul its state association. I would welcome the opportunity to put Georgia in that mix, and let's put our heads together. We can make that happen. We can make that happen and make sure that the precedents, like things that happen in Savannah, don't spread to Atlanta. So I'm with you, and we'll take care of this.
And there'll be a lot of additional informational sessions on the states. We're doing 8 state association meetings. You know, if you're not, it's on the schedule on the trade show website. Even if your state is not conducting one and you want to sit in addition to Glenn's panel on state association management, we have 3 government affairs breakout sessions. Scott and I are going to go over self-regulation in detail, our initiatives on youth access, trademark, trade dress, import, export, a ton of issue areas. So if you really want to become an expert in a lot of the ins and outs of the industry from the retail and manufacturer perspective, that's a worthwhile session. And then we're also doing an international session looking at things globally. Issues that are popping up in the EU and popping up in Australia and New Zealand quickly find their way to cities in the United States. And we've had cross-country or cross-nation dialogue. We were in London, met with the ambassadors to discuss the overall economic impact in the DR, in Honduras, in Nicaragua, and are creating a better profile of the depth and the impact of this industry, and that it's only going to continue. We filed a comment recently on an issue in the European Union, which they plan to go smoke-free by 2040. So we have to weigh in on these things because there's the interconnectedness. We know as in the past few months about supply chain issues. Well, this supply chain is connected. Problems elsewhere will lead to problems there. And that's why we've had to broaden our issue set. And really, this team, along with Ryan Parada, we're really covering our bases with 50 to 60 different issue areas on a given day.
Real quick. Georgia's going to have tax issues eventually.
Yes, sir.
Nothing bridges and nothing makes enemies and rivalries get along better than overarching issues that could put all of you out of business. So if you have tax issues and smoking ban issues, those are more than capable of bridging personalities and institutional, you know, problems like that. So we'll get beyond all that. We'll meet after the session.
Yeah, and I think that, look, real quick takeaway, no issue is going to happen in isolation, full stop. No issue that is going to happen in Washington State is going to stay isolated there that may never reach Georgia. That just is not the case. And so the second aspect of that is this is the role of the National Association, what you're talking about. Because when you get down to local levels, it's like your family, right? If you're across the street or you're in the same county, it's easy to hate each other because you see each other all the time. You interact all the time, right? It's easy. It's easy to hate your siblings, but somebody attacks your family, you rally together, don't, you know, mess with this type of thing. But where we can come in is we want to be that national association to mediate. You don't have to get along in terms of, you know, liking each other and inviting yourself to kids' weddings or whatever the case may be. We can come in as a mediator. We can help set up infrastructure, and we can help set up the ways in which we work together to ensure that the totality of what you're looking at, that your businesses are protected. Beyond that, we don't have to talk to each other. So that's where we can come in to do that, rather than, well, I'm stepping on your toes or I'm doing this, and it's guarding against that aspect of it. So we want to be able to come in, be the honest brokers and mediators.
Glenn, somewhat of a follow-up to that last question. You mentioned that there are states that are going through some more vitriolic policy changes than other states. Is there something that retailers from states that aren't quite dealing with as much can do for other states? And what would that look like?
Can you say it a little louder? I'm sorry. What states can do to help other states?
Yeah.
Did I get that? Absolutely. We've got so many great working models now of state associations that have really gotten their act together and become a model for others. And I got to give you a living, breathing example right now. The New York Tobacconist Association produced this document on how to effectively make the case for a tax cap in the state of New York. When they issued this document, they sent it to me and we compared notes about it, and they openly said, let this become a working document to help other states get tax caps. So we're coming up with this wonderful cross-the-board cookie-cutter methodology to help in that regard. And also, and this is the biggest thing that I want to press on to answer your question, is we're forming what I'm calling the Council of State Associations. And every other month, we're going to conduct a conference call where all the states will be on the same call, the same Zoom meeting. And you're going to learn from each other, and you're going to have practical models to learn from each other. We're now using that to help with get a tax cap in Wyoming. We're going to help do that with a tax cap in Idaho. It's going to help with a tax cap in Illinois and Indiana. Compare those notes on smoking ban legislation. We've got a plethora of models on how to effectively get exemptions for cigar bars and cigar shops, like what just happened in Tennessee and Florida. We've got enough working models now that you are indeed going to learn from what other states have effectively done. We've got model legislation on tax, we've got model legislation on smoking bans, and we're going to use it and export those models. And yes, and we're going to set up the communication mechanism to do it through our Council of State Associations.
One final comment that I have, and then I'm going to have to run. It shows how things happen on the fly, but I have to go meet with a candidate that's running for U.S. Senate here in Nevada with our chairman. But I want to call your attention to a resource that you can pick up at the front at registration if you haven't already. These are some of the monumental milestones and achievements that this association, along with our partners, have worked on since the last year's trade show. And I'm damn proud of the team. You know, we've had no statewide tax increases or product bans in any state this year. And we've had no tax increases at the federal level. This is 2 years of achievements. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we can get down in the dumps or frustrated about because government is coming after businesses in this industry. But there are things that, you know, because of all of you energizing your consumers, which we need to do more of, but there are things that you all should be proud of. And I think that's a major takeaway from this session. We also want people to continue to support the industry. You know, we got through the third lawsuit or will be through on July 26th or shortly after. But there's going to be other legal challenges in the future. There are going to be other costly things, and we need to have a well-oiled machine. So even if it's $5 or $10, go to the QR code, chip in, support the PCA, so we can help support the state associations, candidates that are friendly to premium cigars, because, you know, this is an ever-going battle. I don't want us to rest on our laurels because we've had success. I want to give you a real sense of where we stand. And I'm happy to have a ton of conversations afterwards through the next few days. Thank you all for your attention. I'll turn it over to my colleagues now so I can run to that meeting.
Real quick, I want to go back to your question. Is talk about models on smoking bans and models on taxes. Probably the number one overarching issue that bridged the states this year was flavored tobacco bans. And Colorado serves as a model on how to really kill a bill. And so we have to be as focused on how to kill a bill as we have to do on how to support a bill. And we've got a great collection now of working models on how to effectively kill legislation or at least get the necessary exemptions for premium cigar shops on things like flavored tobacco issues. And we can talk about that sometime too.
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes before we got to, well, maybe a little bit longer than that. And we did want to get to some awards, speaking of models of some associations, but please feel free.
Hi, Glenn. My name is Darren Shah from Karma Cigar Bar. You've been to Karma about 10 years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And Joshua did an event at Karma last year as well. So you've been knowing Karma for a while. We have a state association, fragile association, where half of the business owner is not up for a lobbyist, other half are up for a lobbyist. We have a Senator Bahachuk wrote a legislation tax cap for 72 cents that didn't pass last year. We didn't keep you guys in a loop, but I would like to see if you can get in a loop for getting a tax cap for the state of Indiana, where Senator Bahachuk and also State Representative Mike Andrade is a big advocate for a cigar cap, tax cap. Also, Jeff Phillips, he's a lobbyist for tobacco. I don't know if you know his name. He's a former Secretary of State's son, and he's also up for supporting our cause, but we need sort of support system where we can put money, chip in for our state's betterment of our state's tax cap. What do you have to say about how we can put it together, a state association?
I had great conversations with the sponsoring senator in Indiana about that tax cap bill. Great conversations, and the CAA was very helpful behind the scenes as well. The problem there was it was a very compact, short session, and it was introduced almost towards 2 weeks before adjournment. And so next, when they go back into session in January, it'll be a longer session. We'll have more time to round up the allies to do it. We now have the economic evidence to document how the state will actually make money on it. We have the building blocks for a great, great association there, and you're at the top of the pecking order for us to pull one together. And that tax cap bill will be back in January. It's good. I heard that. Good to know.
All right.
I think in addition to
I think in addition to the lobbying, because you mentioned lobbying and sort of how do you coalesce your state association together when people have mixed feelings about whether or not to pay for lobbying expenditures. You know, another thing that PCA can help with is providing you with technology platforms and things like that so that you can generate grassroots campaigns as well. And those are things that are very cost effective and particularly on the state level where you have legislators that are very sensitive to public outcry. You know, being able to flood those inboxes with positive messages about the legislation you're trying to pass can be very effective, and that's another way that PCA can help support those efforts.
Yeah. All right, yeah, last question, and we're going to get you our Step Up Awards. Yes, sir.
Yes, it's not a question. I just want to speak to the young lady that from Georgia. I'm the owner of ISG Cigars in Savannah, Georgia. Yes, it's true about the smoking law. How I got around the smoking law and made my lounge private.
Yeah.
And that's where I could be able to smoke in there, and I have no problem. But in the city, you cannot smoke. But as long as you make it private, you can smoke in there.
Good to know. There's a lot of places. I know there's, you know, a place in Chicago I know that has a private lounge you can only get to through key fob. The shop is non-smoking, but they've got a good smoking lounge next door because of that very same way. So right now, thank you very much. Guys, we are here. I sound like, you know, hey, we're here all week. Try the deal. Tip your waitress. We're here all week. Please come and find us. Talk to us, whatever your issues are. How can we form your state associations? What are the issues that we can attack? What are some things? Are there people or elected officials with whom you have relationships that we can parlay into something bigger and better? Do we have means that we can probably access to enact tax caps or some of these other things? So on that note, I would like to welcome up and invite to the stage a very dear friend of the industry and a welcome guest. This is U.S. Representative Jim Dash from the great state of Minnesota. Let's give him... been an absolute champion for us and a very big supporter of the industry. Congressman, thank you so much for being here. He's going to help us to...
State representative.
So he's going to help us hand out our Step Up Awards. These are awards, and we talked about examples. One of the things that we like to do with the awards, recognize great accomplishment, recognize great people, but also awards serve as an example that people say, hey, we've done this, so therefore it's a great way to kind of provoke those conversations and learning examples as well. So the first one we would like to welcome up to the stage, Patrick Lucas from Almost Havana Cigars. Newly elected delegate from West Virginia, Patrick Lucas.
Almost,
so there we go.
Almost.
So we've got, you know, State Senator Todd Johnson, and we've got Tony Goins, who's been here. But Patrick in West Virginia said a phenomenal job there working. Now he's going to be a delegate, but a great job. Patrick, congratulations. Well done. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
While they're taking a picture, I got to tell you all this story. Patrick got a board of health. I use the word health. The Board of Health to back him on exempting cigar shops from smoking bans, and it prevented a precedent that would have spread to 50 West Virginia counties. Same year, right now, the West Virginia legislature, through efforts, killed a tax increase, and thirdly, got a bill passed to allow for private cigar bars that could serve food with smoking, and now he's going to get elected to the West Virginia legislature.
It's a hell of a job. So Mr. Donovan Short, there's stairs here too if you don't want to walk all the way around, from the great state of Wyoming. Come on up.
All right,
Clinton, please.
Can I say some words about Donovan? Donovan, this proves the value of one cigar shop. One cigar shop, Casper Cigar Company, calls his representative to initiate a tax cap, got the Joint Revenue Committee of the Wyoming House and Senate to initiate a year-long study on how to enact that tax cap. We've had the first hearing, the second hearing. Donovan gave testimony at both of those. We're on the cusp of that. We got warm fuzzies from the members of the legislature, but that study was initiated because of one phone call from one cigar shop to one elected representative to initiate that.
Congratulations. Great work. The Senator Todd Johnson in the audience, please. There we go. So, Mr. Senator Todd Johnson. So talk about the tax cap in North Carolina. This is a great model, and this is something that we will continue to implement throughout the country.
Todd just couldn't be happy and content with the 50-cent tax caps that had spread throughout the country. Just couldn't be content with 50 cents. Put in a bill to get it at 30 cents and tied it to the budget bill. We stayed in close contact. He built his own coalitions. Every time I called him to say, can we help, Senator? Can we help? I got this under control. Well, and then I won't tell that part of the story, but suffice it to say, through one of the longest sessions of the North Carolina legislature and the longest budget session, he successfully got a 30-cent tax cap married to the budget bill in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, Minnesota, you're on notice now. Yeah. Got to come down. All right. Our last award here is for Mr. Pat Singh from Cigar Sessions. It's Pat here.
Pat has done a remarkable job at spearheading the no tax cap, a dramatic tax decrease for the OTP in the state of Delaware, done an amazing job at organizing not just the shops, but organizing consumers. We've now given testimony in the House and in the Senate, and to prove that these things are a bipartisan issue, it is being spearheaded by nothing but Democrats in the Delaware legislature, and they're on the cusp of absolute success to drop it in the spirit of helping Delaware small businesses.
Good afternoon. Thanks for giving me just one quick minute. I'm State Representative Jim Nash from Minnesota. Any of our Minnesota folks here? There you go. So here's the other thing that I would suggest to you in doing. Glenn is a great resource, fantastic resources up here on the stage, but you actually finding a legislator by just knocking on their door at the Capitol and asking them some frank questions. And the success that we had in Minnesota was that we didn't make it about tobacco, we made it about small businesses. This is about brick and mortar. This is about creating an opportunity for you to do the type of business that you want to do. You wake up at odd hours, you close at odd hours, you put your entire family's fortune on the line to do this thing. You'd said that it's an honorable profession. It is. And that's how we were able to get this done. We passed it in 2017 from $3.50 a stick to 50 cents a stick, and now I'm gonna have to do better. I'm gonna have to lower it even more. But I've held it off for the last number of years by working very closely with the tax chair, who is a Democrat. And I conveyed to him that it's all about small business, and that if we climb back up to a proposal of what was $5, that it will literally kill your business. So find legislators. We don't bite much, and we're happy to listen to you. And some of us are very much behind you.
I think it's just an amazing testament that we have politicians now in this room willing to admit that they know us, willing to embrace us, running for public office, getting elected to city councils and state legislatures. All this has happened in the last decade. And people that have watched this evolve, like John Anderson and Greg Zimmerman and company, it's an amazing testament to the political sophistication that is amassed in this industry in a very, very short period of time.
Absolutely. So if we can get one last very big round of applause and a thank you for United Cigars for their sponsorship for this session. Please find us this week. Let's keep going. Let's get these state associations done. Let's amass the army, and let's continue to advance and move forward. Thank you all. And guess what? We got a little bit of a break before we have the opening night party. It's going to happen just over here. Feel free to relax and hang out and smoke cigars if you need to.
That's right. If you need to, hang out and smoke cigars. That's what we do, folks. But there you have it, the PCA instructing you, informing you, giving you all the information you need. Huh? You didn't pay attention. You fell asleep. Your eyes rolled over. Shame on you, you rat bastard. You. No, I still love you. Listen, there you have it. You can follow me on Instagram, Smoke World Podcast. Email stone@smokeworldpodcast.com. And the website, which we're going to have to keep things rolling because the website is getting a little boring. I know. Smokeworldpodcast.com. Folks, look. If you're still awake, God bless you. Appreciate you. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, you know, tell your cousin. Do what we do, people. Shout out to West Tampa Tobacco Company, sponsoring Smoke World. You know what? I'll wait. See you on the other side. Peace.